Hey, welcome to Tabletop Dropouts. I'm Mike. You may have noticed this format's just a little bit different than what we normally provide you with our normal weekly episodes. It's because I have a very special guest in my interviews with Joseph McCullough. He's going to be discussing a wide variety of topics, but for the most part we're going to be discussing Frostgrave 2.0 and its impending release, as well as a few other questions I had for him. So thanks for listening, and without further ado, I'm going to get started with Joseph McCullough's interview. So for the listeners who may not know who you are Joseph McCullough, creator of Frostgrave, Rangers of Shadowdeep,
yep.
And you're an author of a couple of books. Can you tell us more about who you are?
So I am American, North Carolinian, who's now living in Britain, right on the English coast. I have been a gamer my whole life, first more of a role player and then kind of transitioning into miniatures games, and now kind of both. After coming to Britain originally for school, I ended up getting married to an English girl and thus stayed. I got a job with Osprey Publishing, the kind of famous military history publisher, and was there at a time when they were transitioning from just being a military history publisher into being a game publisher. So I got to be involved in all of that building process. And as part of that, I created Frostgrave as a freelancer. And that became popular enough that slowly my work life has transitioned completely over into game design. So that's where I am now.
As it should. I mean, we actually have a previous episode. We actually did a review of Frostgrave 1.0, which was a whole episode about it, and kind of each of the guys from the Dropouts talked a little bit about what they loved about the game, and we loved it. We had a lot more fun between the three of us just playing a couple of the. We had one guy who had never played before, and right. He was able to. He set up a sigilist, so you know it was just a lot of fun for him. He got into it real quick and picked it up because I got along. I saw some similarities to Necromunda, where you know your main wizard could activate a couple guys in his range, and then you had your apprentice who could do it, and then you had some unit movement and stuff like that. And we actually play Necromunda, and that was kind of the same, you know, the movement stuff that happens in that game was kind
right.
of he was able to pick that up because of the similarity. But we had, quite a good time with that game.
Right. I haven't played the modern incarnation of Necromunda. I played the classic one back in the day, but haven't gotten into the new one yet. So
I actually just I got into the new one. I didn't jump into Warhammer until 8th edition, so
okay.
I didn't know anything about, you know, Necromunda or anything like that.
But. Right.
So, what is your favorite tabletop game, then, besides Frostgrave, obviously?
I don't know. I don't know if I can pick just one. I've played so many, and I'm kind of, I got to admit, I'm kind of going through a nostalgia phase right at the moment for a couple of reasons. One, because I've hit middle age, I think. And also because I think I've now been game designing really for 6 years, kind of very intensely. I want to kind of go back and look at some of the stuff that really made me love gaming. And so I've been working a lot on a game called Silent Death, which is a space fighter game, came out in the 80s. And the mechanics of which continue to kind of influence me, and I think we're way ahead of their time, and not all of them, but certain ones, especially the kind of the shooting mechanic was way ahead of its time. And so I've been enjoying going back and looking at that, and I'm painting up some new fighters for it, and you know, trying to convince people to play a game that's been basically out of print for 20 years. But like I said, I think it's still really worth looking at, both as a player and as a designer.
So I will have to check that out. That's awesome. Yeah, I wanted to kind of say, like, I should have broken it down a little bit better. So what's your favorite tabletop game? What's your favorite RPG? You know, what's your favorite beer and pretzels game, I guess, was kind of where I was going with that. So what's your favorite RPG? Do you play any RPGs? Did you at one point?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I was originally, you know, when I first got into gaming, I called myself a role player. And now I kind of feel like a retired role player because I don't really have a group, but I still read a lot of the books and stuff. And I played most of your big namers from the 80s and 90s. I probably played more GURPS than anything else. And that may just be because it's a generic system and thus could be applied to any campaign you could think of. So that was good for my gaming group. And has been a favorite for a long time, but you know, I've played a lot of D&D. I've played a lot of Call of Cthulhu. I was big into Deadlands for a while, and then on into Savage Worlds when it transitioned to that. So a lot of kind of the, I guess almost the second generation role playing games. Like I said, I did play a lot of D&D in both its AD&D and third edition form, but most of them are kind of from that second group of games that came along. But probably if I had to pick one, it would probably be GURPS in terms of the one I'd play the most. In terms of a beer and pretzels game, I don't know if this is a beer and pretzels game, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. I really like Robo Rally. And if you don't know Robo Rally, it was the game designed by Richard Garfield after he created Magic the Gathering. And it's a board game about little robots running around a factory floor, just having a race. But the way the mechanics work, you basically have to kind of like program your robot each turn, but you have a time limit and you've got different cards that, you know, tell it which to go. And you end up panicking and your robots end up spinning off in all directions and doing things you didn't want them to. And it's just absolutely hilarious. And I've always loved it. So
that sounds incredible, actually. I will have to check that out.
There was like a second edition done not too long ago. I'm not 100% sure by whom. So the original one was done by Wizards of the Coast, and I'm not sure if they did the second or not. But somebody has done another edition, which is probably easier to obtain than the original one. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out because it is a load of fun.
Well, yeah, I'll have to check out you know, a few different spots where I get my games from.
Exactly.
Okay, so kind of, I know that Frostgrave 2.0 is coming out very soon. A lot of our listeners who have come up to me and talked to me said that they, you know, they're curious about, you know, what's happening with Frostgrave, the, you know, the Something Awful forums. They have a thread dedicated to you, which is kind of where I got all my information.
Right.
What's called, it's a Circa du Frostgrave on Ice. Or War Games on Ice, Circa du Frostgrave. It's pretty funny, but a lot of people are big fans of it on the forums too. Yeah. And so what are some of the goals of Frostgrave 2.0? What are you trying to kind of accomplish with the new edition?
Okay. So two main goals, which were make the game more fun and make the game more balanced. And the first one is the most important of those two, but both of them were kind of the things I was trying to do. And in terms of more fun, so basically, I don't think the original version of the game has any huge problems that haven't been addressed. I think the biggest problem it had was probably its experience point system. And that was actually quickly house-ruled by most people and then officially house ruled, I guess, in one of the supplements. And so that house rule or that update will be stuck into the second edition. So that's been seen already. But But there were just a few places in the system where, especially me as a game designer, could see kind of clunks, things that just didn't work smoothly or just didn't work quite the way I wanted them to or worked against the spirit of the game. Because Frostgrave was the first war game I wrote, you know, there was a bit of not knowing what I know now in terms of game design. And, you know, I've learned a lot of lessons over the years, both about game design in general and about this system specifically, that have allowed me to see places where it's like, gosh, if I just made this little change, it would flow so much better. And most of these were small enough that individually they weren't big deals, but eventually I kind of compiled a list of enough of them that I thought, if I put all these together, you know, and made all these changes, then I think the game will just flow a lot better and people will have a lot more fun. And a lot of that circles around the spells. So there's 80 spells in the game, but I think probably only about 50 to 60 of them were ever used, because the others were either too specialized or just too weak. So one of my goals was to really get in there, look at the spells, make them all useful and desirable, and to bring a little more balance to them so that people really could feel like I can take whatever I want and that won't put me at a huge disadvantage. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Just to cut you off, what were some of the spells that never got used? I'm just curious.
You know, as soon as I answer this, I'm going to, you know, probably get emails from people saying, that was my favorite spell. So there are some... It tended to be clustered around certain schools of magic. So like the soothsayer spells. Soothsayers had one great spell, which is mind control, and then a couple of other decent spells. But they also had spells like awareness, which kind of gave you a bonus to your initiative. But it was such a weak spell, it didn't seem worth taking. It certainly wasn't worth taking if you were a soothsayer because you had these better spells. And it was generally not worth taking if you weren't a soothsayer because not only is it outside your school, so there's going to be a penalty, but it's not that strong of a spell anyway. So that's been completely reworked to make it a stronger spell. You also had things like, for the illusionist, you had beauty and monstrous form, which were two spells that did very similar things. So again, like most people took beauty because it was just slightly better than monstrous form. So monstrous form didn't really have a place in the game. So that's actually been dropped from the game and replaced with a new spell that I think that brings more variety and is a much more interesting and viable spell for the game. So I'm now getting to the point that, like, since I don't have the printed book in my hand yet, I start to get confused as to what's in the new edition versus what's in the first edition. I need to actually, like, get the book in my hand and get some games in now, and I'll start to, you know, get it harder in my mind what the changes I've made, because it's now several months since I submitted half a year since I submitted the second edition manuscript. And so it's fading a little as to what exactly I did, but...
Oh, I'm excited for it, so I hope you get your copy soon.
Yep.
So what do you think the biggest change to the edition is going to be?
So I think the spells as a collective is the biggest, because that's where the most fun in the game is to be found, and giving these people a few new spells, but more, like I said, changing the balance of them and changing some of those spells, I think people will have a lot of fun. Otherwise, the biggest change is probably to how soldiers are organized. So in first edition, you can have 8 soldiers, and here's the list, take any you want. In second edition, I've now broken soldiers down into 2 groups. There's kind of standard soldiers, and there's specialist soldiers. And you can have a maximum of 4 of the specialists out of the 8 soldiers you can take. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The main reason for that is it really does a lot to promote balance over a campaign. The biggest way to throw a campaign out of balance in Frostgrave was for someone to earn a whole lot of money really early on in the campaign and just spend that all upgrading all their soldiers to kind of the max. And so I wanted to get rid of that possibility, which wasn't a huge one. That's not generally how most people play the game anyway. But like I said, it's one of those places that I heard a clunk in my head. And I think it actually leads to more interesting warband construction now. You have to put a little more thought. It's not just what I can afford. It's really, what do I want to do? Do I want to focus more on, you know, ranged combat, or would I rather focus on some really heavy hitting close combat guys? The other thing I did as part of that was I made the most basic soldiers, the thugs and the thieves, free, so that you basically don't have to pay anything to get them. And this gets rid of one of the other big balance issues, which was if your warband got absolutely mauled in a game and you had several guys die, you could potentially go into the next game down several men. And that's a really bad thing for the game balance. It just, it makes for an unfun game to be two guys down. So now you're always assured that you will have a full warband. It may not be of the highest quality, but you're going to have your 10 guys. And again, that should lead to balance. And so if you take these kind of, the way the soldiers are constructed, I think that's what people will immediately see as the biggest difference. But hopefully they'll see that actually, while it does put a little more limitation on what you can do, it actually makes what you can do more interesting, and it certainly brings a better balance to the game.
Awesome. So I know that you released a lot of content for Frostgrave 1.0, and
yep.
I personally am a fan of Thaw of the Lich Lord, but that's because mm-hmm. I'm big, you know, skull and bones, death, you know.
Right.
That's kind of my bread and butter. It's one of my favorites. Which kind of mini campaign or, you know, expansion are you the most proud of in Frostgrave? What's your favorite that you've made so far?
I probably favoritize the ones I've done more recently, just because, you know, I feel like everything I've done builds on the things that have gone before it. So I really like the Wizard's Conclave. No, sorry, that was not the right one. I do like the Wizard's Conclave, but that one's not actually mostly by me. That one's a collection of other games. I meant to say, I really like the Maze of Melkor, which is the longest campaign I've written. So it's 12 scenarios. But it's also one that's kind of special to me because I wrote it as I was moving out of Oxford. So I'd lived in Oxford for 10 years working for Osprey. And you know, I was kind of heading off to be a full-time game designer, still working for Osprey, but leaving the office and leaving Oxford. And so that book is almost a kind of thank you to Oxford, and a lot of the scenarios are based on things I saw there and the things I did there, and the kind of, you know, the university, because the whole thing is set within this kind of magical university. And it really felt good to me, and I was able to bring a lot of story to it, because you have the stories of kind of the ex-teachers that were there, and so I really enjoy that one. But I'm also a big fan of Perilous Dark, which is the last of the first edition books. And it's a very different book from all the ones that preceded it, because it's about solo play. And there are 10 scenarios in a campaign there that you can play solo or you can play cooperatively with another player. And partly I really like that, just bringing that aspect to tabletop. It's not something that's been a big thing in most tabletop war gaming, and it's something I want to promote and push. But also, about half of that book is really just kind of my thoughts on solo gaming. So it's kind of tips and techniques and different systems you can use to make solo gaming fun. And most of those can be applied to any war game you play solo, or at least any skirmish game. And So it's kind of, it's not only a book of, a crunchy book for Frostgrave in terms of getting 10 scenarios, but it's also just a book about gaming. It's just a book about having fun while playing on the tabletop. And it was just really fun to write that because it was a very different writing experience than the kind of more instructional, or at least more technical books that precede it.
Awesome. I don't think I have that one. I'm going to have to look into it.
Well, like you said, there are a lot of them. So.
Well, so when you do play Frostgrave, what is your favorite school to play as?
For first edition, it was the Enchanter. Partly because I'm not a hugely aggressive kind of gamer, and the Enchanter allowed me to kind of sit back a bit, at least with my wizard. So, you know, he has a lot of buff spells, so I could just buff up my man, and he has telekinesis, so I could move treasure without exposing my wizard too much to fire. And I just really liked that idea of the wizard as the supporter of his warband, as opposed to the standing out front blasting things. So that one worked out well for me. With the second edition, I have a feeling that it's going to be the Illusionist, because the Illusionist now has a couple of new spells that really play with the other player, that really kind of are there to disrupt what the other player is trying to do, which is what the Illusionist should be, and something I think I only got somewhat right in the first edition. And it's a school that's got a lot of spells that help the interaction between players, the kind of back and forth nature of the game, which is when the game is at its best, when I cast a spell and then you cast a spell to kind of try to undo what I did, and then I cast that spell to kind of undo what you did. In the same way kind of Magic the Gathering plays with, you cast that, I cast this, and back and forth and back and forth. I think Frostgrave is at its best when that's happening, when you're really dueling, even if that isn't in the kind of physical sense, but in the, you know, back and forth, trying to stop the other from doing what they're doing. And I think the Illusionists are going to be a good one for that.
That sounds pretty awesome, and also a really good way to piss off my co-host.
They're going to be the blue magic of Frostgrave too. So.
That sounds fun. I'm actually really looking forward to it. So you do have a couple of other games that you've, Rangers of Shadowdeep,
yeah,
a few others. So, you know, Frostgrave 2 is coming out. What else are you kind of, are you working on anything else?
I'm always working on things now. You know, if you use your creativity kind of professionally, and not even professionally, but if you just really devote yourself to creative pursuits, you start to get this snowball effect where, you know, I've pushed myself, I've worked really hard to think of these things, and then the ideas just start coming, and they start coming faster and faster because you've got so much kind of knowledge and practice built up, and you get to this point where I'm at now, where in some ways I'm almost overloaded with ideas and I want to do too many things at once, and I'm having to kind of rein myself in. But you know, it does reach a point where there's only so many fantasy worlds I can hold in my head at the same time, but I'm having so much fun. So so with Rangers of Shadowdeep, that's my self-published game, although there's a deluxe edition out from Modiphius now, but all the supplements and stuff I self-publish myself, and I'm always working on something for that. I'm right in the middle of actually a kind of a three-part series on that one. So for people that don't know, Rangers is a kind of solo and cooperative miniatures game that really pushes miniatures gaming towards role-playing. You're part of this big story, and the current story is that you're going off into the Shadowdeep, which is the evil realm, in the effort to rescue a prince. And So I just finished the first part of that, which was you have to kind of cross this desert looking for a new way to get into the evil realm. And then the next one is going to be the actual journey into the realm. And so just having a lot of fun with that. Like I said, kind of it's a lot more single narrative driven than say Frostgrave is. Frostgrave is kind of a toolbox to make your own stories, where Rangers of Shadowdeep is a way to bring your character into the story I'm telling. So that's a lot of fun. And I've been doing, so one of the other games I've written recently for Osprey is Oathmark, which is a mass battle fantasy game. So kind of ranks of, you know, elves and dwarves and orcs and such fighting in big units around the table. And that came out earlier this year, and I've been working on kind of supplementary material for that. And the biggest thing I've been working on at the moment is Stargrave, which is taking the core Frostgrave rules and moving the whole setting into space, you know, which
no kidding.
Yeah, something I'm closing in on being done with that. But it's really it's been the major thing for the last 6 months, really. And a really interesting kind of game design process, because while I'm obviously able to use the Frostgrave core rules, which is great, so I don't have to redesign that, there's obviously other elements that need to be brought in into that. And just this, what seems like a simple switch of kind of taking the swords away from everyone and giving them guns instead leads to a very different play experience, a very different kind of tactical experience on the table. And so tweaking the rules and designing new rules and working with that and figuring out, you know, how I can push the fun of that has been a real fun, interesting experience. So that's it's not coming out till next year, so don't get too excited, but but it is happening.
Well, I'll pick it up as soon as it drops. So I guess, you know, going into kind of you started Blaster with a few other guys.
Yeah.
We covered that in our first episode of the podcast, where you and Mike Hutchison, Ash Barker, Sean Sutter, and just, you know, Joe McGuire started a podcast where you guys kind of put your, you know, you guys do different things. And I know that the first issue came out, I don't know. I actually don't have a date for when. I think it was June, right?
Yeah, it was about a month and a half ago, I think. Maybe a month ago. I can't. Pretty recently.
And I know that, you know, you kind of. So do you want to maybe talk about that for tell listeners what Blaster is and kind of what it entails?
I think at its core, Blaster is just five game designers having a good time. so, you know, writing games can be hard, and it can be wearying at times. I mean, don't get me wrong, I absolutely love it, but it is work, and it can be very draining. And especially if, you know, if you're writing under a system where, you know, you've contracted to write a game or a supplement or whatever, you know, you've got deadlines and you've got expectations and things like that. And Blaster was a way to kind of get rid of a lot of that and just say, you know what, let's just group together and have some fun designing games. Let's not worry too much about the commercial viability of what we're doing. Let's not worry about, you know, whether it fits with anything that's gone before. Like I said, let's just have some fun. And and it started really with a conversation between me and Ash Barker. And then we're like, well, who else would we like to have fun with? And then, you know, kind of pulled in these other guys until we had a collection of you know, what accounts for a lot of the independent game design going on at the moment. Obviously not near all of it, but a good cross section. And so, yeah, we just started. Everybody said, well, this is what I want to do for issue one, and this is what I want to do for issue one. And now we said, here's what we want to do for issue two, and we're all kind of just writing things that make us smile and make us happy to be game designers. And luckily we also were able to recruit a really good graphic designer who not only has brought a lot of beauty to the magazine, but has also helped keep us on task a little bit. Has kind of taken over as the kind of manager of it all. And so, yeah. And, you know, it's an interesting format because I know for some people, the magazine won't be worth it because they only play, you know, they only play my games or they only play Mike Hutchinson's games, and they don't really want to buy a magazine that's got four things that they don't want. But, you know, like I said, since it's just done for fun and none of it's kind of important material that you have to play certain games, I think that's okay. You know, come and join us if you want to, and if it's not for you, that's fine. We are trying. So the first issue does have a Martian pod racing game by Mike Hutchinson that you don't need anything else for. Well, you need the templates for Gaslands, but you can download those for free. So it's basically a full standalone game, and there's going to be another one of those in issue two, and that's probably something we'll try to keep going forward. Although again, not putting any kind of limitations on ourselves, but giving that so that, you know, if you buy this, even if you only play my games, say, you get the material for my games, but you do also get this full game you can try out. So, but like I said, it's really just a way for us to have fun as game designers.
It's actually really cool. I actually I was just looking at what Blaster Volume 1 had in it, and
yep.
I know that I actually had a listener tell me about the Martian Racing Federation stuff,
right,
for the Mike released, and looks like a lot of fun. And I have not checked out Rangers of Shadow Deep yet, but
okay.
Co-op, miniatures, role-playing, you know, you were speaking my language there, so I'll send you some correspondence later on, let you know how it goes.
Alrighty.
So, kind of being somebody that is kind of this well-known person in the war game, miniature game, tabletop game universe, what advice do you have to any listeners that are thinking about making their own, you know, first real game? You know, you've got those people that want to make a game that maybe they don't see, or maybe that's underrepresented. Mm-hmm. How would you kind of, what would you say your biggest piece of advice would be to somebody that wants to make their very first board game?
Okay. I would honestly say just start writing it. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, you need to work on your skills as a writer. And because even if you have all the best rules in the world, if you can't explain them to somebody, you know, through writing, then your game's going to fail. And writing, like everything else, is something you get better at the more you practice. So start practicing. But the other thing is, you just need to get in the habit of devoting the time to it. And for most people, especially if they're not practiced writers, the writing of it is going to be one of the hardest, longest parts of creating a game. So you just need to get in the habit of saying, like, this 30 minutes a day, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write. And it doesn't matter how much you actually produce during that time, even if all you write's 100 words or 200 words, or, you know, you explain that rule, then you've accomplished something. And if you just do that day after day, then eventually you're going to have a game. And even if that game is not perfect, as it almost certainly won't be, you've now got a full document. You can show it to other people. You can start playtesting it, and it's so much easier to kind of rip pieces out and replace them than it is to kind of write it from scratch. So, you know, like I said, just get started, because it's going to be a long road. And the sooner you start it, and the sooner you start developing the habits of doing it, the sooner you're going to get there, and the better you're going to get at it. I know with writing and with game design, I don't think people realize that it does work like everything else. Just the more you practice it, and it's like I was saying with creativity earlier, the more you practice your creativity, the more the better you get at it, and the easier it will all come. And so yeah, start working on it. That's my big piece of advice. My other one is just play the widest variety of games possible. I was really lucky that in university, I basically lived at a gaming store, and thus I got exposed to just so many games, and you just see the different possibilities and the way different people use different mechanics to achieve different effects, and thus you develop this repository of knowledge and these tools you can draw upon for your own games. So play as many as you can, and start writing them now. You know, even if you've only got half an idea, start writing down that half an idea, and probably the rest of the idea will come as you're working on it. So.
Well, that is very sound advice, and thank you very much for that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of my fun interview questions,
okay.
Kind of just go through it. But like, so you're the head of monolithic game company of your choice for one day. What do you do? Do you bring something back? Do you implement something? Do you change the rules? What do you do?
So this is monolithic game company of my choice, or?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Any game company that you know.
Okay. So many good ones. I wouldn't call these guys monolithic, but so I mentioned before that like GURPS was kind of one of my big role-playing games. So I'd love to take over Steve Jackson Games for a minute and for a day. And what I would do is probably drive the company into the ground very quickly. But I would sell off Munchkin. And I don't know if you know Munchkin, or I don't know if you know Steve Jackson Games. Okay. But Steve Jackson Games was a big kind of early player in role-playing games and war games before that. And then at some point they created Munchkin, or Steve Jackson created Munchkin, and it obviously exploded into such a hit that basically took over the entire company, you know, understandably so, because it was so much more profitable than anything else. But it's, you know, and I think it's a fun enough game, but it's not the game from them that I've always been interested in. So I'd love to see them sell that off, take all the money that they can from that, and thus fund all the things I want to do, which is three things, I think. One, I'd love to see him get back into really pushing GURPS. Not necessarily because the system is the greatest ever, but because up until 10 years or so ago, I think GURPS was the greatest library of role-playing stuff. So, I mean, I don't know how many source books GURPS had, but, you know, it was dozens upon dozens upon dozens about different worlds, about different time periods, about different genres. And even if you didn't play GURPS, those books were just wonderful. If you were like, you know, I really want to run a Viking game, they got a book on Vikings. Or if I want to run a pulp game, they got a book on pulp, or, you know, and they invented a lot of their own interesting settings. And I'd just love to see that come back, because they used so many talented people. Talented game designers came in to write specific books. So Ken Hite wrote their book on horror, and Graham Davis is famous for a lot of the early Warhammer stuff, wrote a lot of their books on historical stuff. And gosh, if you just have that library, it's such a resource, and I'd love to see them get back to really kind of pushing that resource. But I'd also love to see them go back to some of their earlier stuff in terms of when they got started and when the industry was young. People put out a lot of small games. They even called them micro games. So things that came out of that were like Ogre and Illuminati and Car Wars. And these things were like, I guess in some ways they're a little bit like what Blaster does, in terms of like that Martian pod racing is a mini game. And it was a way for creators to really try different things. And kind of, it was a low investment strategy of, let's see if this works, and let's see if this works. And some of those things grow up to be huge, something like Car Wars that, you know, ended up being this huge game over the next 10 years, and Ogre, which has just kind of continuously come back, and a lot of them fade away and you never see them again. But I'd love to see a company focused on doing things like that. Another good example, like Cheap Ass Games that did that, would put out just a lot of little different games with different mechanics and see kind of what stuck. And so I just love the kind of wild creativity that that kind of company, or that move for a company can come up with. And the last thing I would have them do is to put out just a really good modern hobby magazine. I don't exactly know that would consist of. I know that, you know, the internet has made a lot of what hobby magazines were before redundant and irrelevant, but there's something about that physical nature of the magazine showing up and reading through it and it having a diverse coverage. It's so difficult in today's game market kind of to take it all in. There's just so much internet noise, and you know, even if you just kind of follow one company like Games Workshop, there's so much noise surrounding it that you just can't take it all in. And the magazine is a much easier pace to digest things, and because it's there in that form, I think you're more likely to go outside your comfort zone. So, you know, there could be an article on Games Workshop, but then the next article is about this game you've never heard of. So, all right, you know, I'll read it and maybe it'll be something I'm interested in, maybe something not. But I just love to, you know, have something that was the modern equivalent of Dragon Magazine or White Dwarf when it was in its early days, or something later like Shotus that covered the gaming industry as a whole. But with player usable material. So like I said, that's maybe not the wisest, maybe none of those are wise moves in today's market. That's why, you know, Steve Jackson isn't doing them now. But since I've just sold Munchkin and have, you know, many millions to sit on while I make mistakes and do stuff that isn't as useful, I can at least give it a shot for a few years using the money. So.
That's a great answer. You know, most of the time when I ask that question, it's like, which company people pick, you know, Wizards or, you know, Games Workshop. Right. And or they like bring back their favorite faction from Games Workshop. Or
right.
Something like that. So it's very refreshing to hear such a...
I mean, Games Workshop is one of those first ones you go to because there's so much cool stuff you can play with. But in truth, the way Games Workshop's going now, you know, all the stuff's coming back anyway. If it was 10 years ago, Games Workshop, that might have been my answer, because it'd be like, they're just sitting on all this stuff and not doing anything with it. But now they seem actually in a good place, and you know, I think you can let them fly. So.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of, you know, GW.
Yep.
I saw in your blog that you actually either played 40K or you collected it.
And, yeah. Go ahead.
So what was your army? And what edition did you play?
So when I was just getting into the hobby, when I was like 13, which was in, you know, I guess right around the late 80s, early 90s, Games Workshop stuff was kind of hard to come by in the U.S., but I was able to get a bit of it. So I actually had a box of plastic Imperial Guard, the original ones, and I had some issues of White Dwarf magazine, and so I played with it in that sense, but I never actually had Rogue Trader. I didn't get Rogue Trader until later. So we kind of played with the 40, me and my friend played with the 40K universe, even if we didn't actually have the rules, and we had a lot of fun with that. And the only time after university, I went to work for another gaming store in Maryland, and they had a big 40K kind of contingent there. So I got into it because I was working at the store and I wanted to, you know, hang out with the guys, and it was looking like a lot of fun. And then that was when 5th edition just came out. And that's the first time I ever built like a purpose-built 40K army, which was with 5th edition. And then they put out the Demon Hunters Codex, And that's the first time an army really spoke to me. Like, gosh, I love this concept. You know, I love the idea of an inquisitor who's devoted to fighting demons and and did what was a terrible move play-wise. I totally ignored the Grey Knights from that. I was like, I want nothing but stormtroopers, which, you know, are not great troops. But, you know, I loved this idea of these kind of just humans having to fight demons. And so I made a demon hunter army that's basically all stormtroopers and a few inducted Imperial Guard and then an Inquisitor. I also love that it's the only time that you could give basically humans land raiders, because I love land raiders. They're just like the coolest APC ever. But since I wasn't a Space Marine player, I didn't have much use for them. But then the stormtroopers could get them as their transport. So I had three land raiders and I had all the stormtroopers. And I didn't play it a lot, in all honesty, just because of time, because I was working at the store, obviously I couldn't actually play that often, but I did play it, and I had a lot of fun with it, but it was never quite my type of game. I'm very pushed towards being a narrative war gamer. I guess that comes out of being a role player and wanting to use wargaming for a lot of that same, and at that time especially, that was not what Games Workshop was pushing. Even now, I mean, there's still really a kind of, you know, make your army and play it in a more of a competitive sense, whereas I wanted to tell ongoing stories. So since then, I mean, I've still got that army and I still occasionally add bits to it, although I tend to, when I break it out, I'm using other rule sets, which isn't to say I don't think 40K is a bad rule set. I just, like I said, it's not doing what I normally want to do these days. So, but I still read a lot of the Black Library books, especially Dan Abnett. I'll read any of the Gaunt's Ghost stuff he does.
Abnett's really good.
I'm currently rereading all of the Gaunt's Ghosts. So I've just read the first five in the last 3 months, and you know, push through and do all of them now that he's kind of, I don't know if the series is over, but it's certainly reached an end point that, you know, he could leave it if he wanted to, but it's interesting to go back and see it again. And also just kind of with a new eye of thinking how I think about things now in a creative aspect and what he's done and, you know, how things change throughout the series, but they're also just, you know, great reads that really make you want to paint miniatures and get them on the table. And I read some other Black Library stuff. So I stay connected with the universe. And even as I don't play a lot of their games. I did have my parents send over a copy of Blitz Bowl because it's a Barnes & Noble exclusive. You can't get it over here. But I played a lot of Blood Bowl back in the day. And I just love the idea of it kind of being arena Blood Bowl. And you can play a game in like 45 minutes, which is more likely the time I'm going to have to play a game now than the kind of 2 hours that Blood Bowl generally takes. So I'm having a bit of fun with that, but for the most part, I don't play a lot of GW games, but I do, you know, I'm always interested in what they're doing. I do buy some of their models to use for other things, and you know, they are the industry leader. So it's just impossible to ignore what they're doing.
Oh yeah. So,
and you know, even I probably won't buy 9th edition. I might, but even I got excited that they're putting it out. I don't even know why. You know, it's just, wow, 9th edition. Yeah, like it's a big thing. You know, it's and it is interesting. You know, I like the sound of that. They are doing some things to perhaps move it more towards my type of gaming with the I forget what it's called, Crusade system or something, but the, where you actually kind of, you know, build your army and thus kind of tell more of a story with your armor. That sounds like it's a lot of fun. And I'm, you know, I am for anything that pushes gaming towards more individual creativity. You know, I think people just get so much more out of it if they put their own creativity in it. So anything that encourages that, I'm in favor of.
I mean, yeah, you hit the nail on the head, especially for me as somebody who came into Warhammer in 8th edition. I had played lots of other games for that. My first army was kind of in the same vein as you. I picked the Death Watch because I had been reading Eisenhorn, and I liked the Ordo Xenos alien hunter Space Marines, but the Inquisitor and the Acolytes, and kind of I'm coming to hunt down this alien menace, and kind of being that way, only for me to show up to a game store with my army to get just basically, you know, pounded into the ground in a turn because I didn't do the competitive.
You didn't optimize. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I totally hear what you're coming from with the, you know, that shortcoming. And that's what probably makes me the most excited for Crusade is, you know, I did see guys at my FLGS, playing a game of Kill Team, or what they were trying to do is they were starting a Kill Team campaign in 8th, and then they were going to carry it over to Crusade once that dropped. And I thought that was a really cool and interesting idea that kind of brought about that narrative progression.
Yeah.
So, you know. So,
I mean, go ahead.
No, yeah. Finish your thought.
I was just thinking, I mean, in some ways, it really just comes down to who you play with. I mean, the way 40K worked competitively is great in the sense that you can just show up with your army at a gaming store and you can have a good chance of getting a game. And thus it's a great thing in that you've got so much more chance of gaming. But I think the best game experiences are when you find that group of other people that game in the same style you do. And that may be competitive, but it may not. It may be narrative. And when you can kind of work together to build a campaign and to set it up the way you want it to be, you just end up having a lot more fun that way. But obviously that's hard to achieve, especially as you get older and, you know, have less chance to just go and hang out at the gaming store. But
yeah, I hear that. So what game are you most looking forward to? That's not, you know, Frostgrave 2.0 or anything like that. Are you excited about any games that are coming out?
Probably. I have a very how to put this? So, like, I've watched as the gaming industry, for a large part, has moved into Kickstarter. Not Games Workshop because it's big enough; it doesn't need to. And not some of the biggest companies, Fantasy Flight stuff, but a lot of the smaller stuff is obviously going through Kickstarter for economic reasons and advertising reasons. I totally understand, but I don't like Kickstarter for the most part, for reasons I won't go into hugely here, but one of which is I don't want to buy a game now that I'm not going to get for 9 months to a year, because chances are by the time I get the game, I'll have moved on from whatever attracted it to me to begin with. So in that sense, it's hard to look forward to games in kind of the same way as it was before. But I'm an old school BattleTech player. Again, I love the BattleTech universe. I'm not crazy about the rules system. They've got another rule system called Alpha Strike, which makes it more of a tabletop miniatures game, which I quite enjoy. But I just love big stompy robots and them blasting each other. And they've got a new RPG coming out. Well, I think it's come out in the U.S. called MechWarrior Destiny. I know I'm just waiting for it to get over here, so I'm quite excited to see. What interests me about that is apparently it's a much more kind of storytelling game, and I want to see how they integrate what is a very much war game crunchy idea of big battle robots smashing each other and how you turn that into a storytelling game successfully. So that's something I'm really intrigued by. Beyond that, like I said, I tend to try to avoid kind of looking ahead. There's so much gaming stuff out in the here and now. I'd rather get excited about something that I can just buy right at this moment than get excited about what's coming next. Because otherwise I end up always chasing the next thing and not fully appreciating what's right in front of me. So, but you know, I do see the news coming all the time, and you know, occasionally things pop in there. But yeah, like I said, try to, like I said, even I am excited about Ninth Edition. Even if I don't buy it, I'd just like to hear what people are doing with it and what changes it'll have. So yeah.
Well, that is just awesome, and thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I appreciate it very much. And just to remind our viewers, when and where can they get Frostgrave 2.0? Where can they pre-order it?
So you should be able to get it from anywhere you get books, in truth, so Amazon or your local bookstore, or your local gaming store, or anywhere that has Osprey books. I would suggest, if you're in the UK, I would definitely order it through North Star. North Star produces, along with Osprey, the official Frostgrave miniatures. And that they're also, I think they're going to have a free miniature giveaway with the book. But otherwise, you know, if you're not in the UK, or don't want to order from the UK, then really, obviously, first, if you have a local gaming store, get it at your local gaming store, because, you know, you've got to support those things if you want them to exist. And, you know, especially if you're playing there, you really owe it to them to buy your stuff through them. And, you know, any gaming store should be able to get it if they don't carry it already. Otherwise, if you're more isolated, you can get it through Amazon or just really any number of online gaming dealers in both the US and the UK. So shouldn't have too much problem.
All righty. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been good.
That concludes our podcast interview with Joseph McCullough. If you liked what you heard here today, please follow us, Tabletop Dropouts on Instagram, Tabletop Dropouts on Facebook. We're on anywhere you can listen to podcasts, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a review. And once again, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.